Hi, everybody, and welcome to this latest edition of the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
Howdy.
Howdy. And this week, our guest is all the way from Barbados, and I'm going to be a typical American and say I have no idea where that is, Justin Sampson, who is working on the Starflight-esque upcoming game, currently being Indiegogo'd. I don't know how you say that as a verb, but it's called Void of Darkness. I've talked about it on the site a lot in the news updates and such. It's a game I'm very excited about, so I figured, Justin, since you have the Indiegogo campaign going right now, that we'd bring you on to talk about it. Now, I apologize. I haven't really able to play it. You sent me a build, like, ages ago, but it got, I apologize, it got lost in the ether. There's just so much shiny out there that I get very easily distracted. I'm like Doug in the movie Up. Squirrel! That's me in a nutshell.
No, that's fine, because that build was probably a very early prototype, so it wasn't really much to see, but it was just probably a good demonstration, so you would have been able to get an idea of where it was going and what made it similar to Starflight.
Well, you've put out a lot of videos, and I've watched, not all of them, but I've watched a bunch of them, and yeah, it looks very Starflight-esque. So, for those folks who don't know what Void of Darkness is, or who haven't seen the videos, could give us just a rundown of what the game is, what you're planning for the game, that sort of thing.
Okay, the game, to give just a brief history of how it all started. Initially, I wrote a kind of a test of a Starflight game for the Starflight 3 team in one weekend, trying to illustrate to them how the platform for Blitzmats would be ideal to service their needs in terms of getting a game out, a sequel to Starflight, sometime this century, since they've been working on it for the past 16 years.
And I know, right?
Nothing has really come of it.
Oh my
so
god, I know.
I kind of did that as a demonstration for them, and I did a kind of a combat prototype. And my argument to them was that you need someone in charge of the project, and you need someone who's going to make those final decisions, and it has to look like Starflight in the end. Starflight can't be 3D.
No.
To capture the full spirit of Starflight, it needs to be 3D, and 2D. And a game can still be 2D these days. We've seen that with Faster Than Light.
Yeah.
We've seen that with many other games on Knives. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. So I was trying to convince them that it could have been 2D, and if it once done well, it would serve what Starflight was, well, modernizing it for the future.
Right.
So that's how the project itself came about.
So this was for the Starflight 3 team?
Correct. This demo I created.
Oh.
I wrote it in the weekend with Blitzmax. Just one weekend, but they didn't ask me to do it. I just volunteered, trying to convince them after following their project for the last 16 years, since 1997 when Adam Skillinger and Patrick Mead were there. And they constantly changing the engine from this platform to this platform to this game engine to this game engine. They're not on Panda. And I'm not really intending to knock them. What I was trying to do was try to spur them on and showing them what they're doing wrong and that they're not getting it out and what they need to do in order to get it out. But they seem to just be content to fiddle with whatever they're doing in the Starflight name. And what pisses me off slightly is that they have the rights to it. No one else can have the rights to it. And they're just mucking around with it. That's the only thing that really...
Yeah, because they were the ones that got the blessing of the original developers.
Correct. So yeah. That kind of is annoying. It's at least after 16 years, you don't have anything. Just pass it on, because I would have been quite willing to make a Starflight clone. Not clone, but continue the game for free, you know, in their vein, release it for free. That would be fine. But so that's one... When they kind of rejected the idea and went with what they wanted, I kind of said, well, I can't do a Starflight game because I don't have the rights. So what I could do, the best I could do is inspired by. So Void of Darkness was basically born, and it was named Void of Darkness because I wrote the story for the game first.
Mm.
And then I used some of the code back from the same demo I wrote for them to kind of come up with a quick prototype of how it would look, which is kind of what you would have got all those months ago initially. From there, I just started get adding to it. But if I had to describe Void of Darkness as someone who didn't know about it, it is a 2D, you know, starship action exploration role-playing game. in the vein of Starfleet 1 and 2. To add to that, I want to capture also like the feel of Distant World a bit. Now, I know it can't be as epic scope as Distant Worlds, but Distant Worlds gave me, and I'm sure a lot of other people, that's why it's so popular, this huge scope to the universe, a lot to see out there, a lot to do. The only issue with that was you couldn't command and control your own ship singly in real time. You could direct it as if it was an RTS, like a real-time strategy, point and click.
Right.
But you couldn't actually take command of it, take command of its systems, its crew, and that sort of thing. That was one of the things that intrigued me about Distant Worlds was when I was reading the alternate play styles, one of them said, you know, take command of your own ship and guide it through the universe as it goes about doing whatever and do whatever you tell it to do. And I want to kind of expand on that in Voice Dark as well.
That's actually how I really clicked with the game, is playing it that way with Legends. And yeah, it was really amazing to play it that way with all this other stuff going around you, all this other traffic, you know, all these other things happening, the size of the universe. And I can only imagine having like a more detailed tactical and RPG style control of your ship in that kind of populated, extensive universe. So you just made my ears totally perk up like a dog. I mean, you know, you mentioned Starfleet 1 and 2. I'm already there, but you throw in a little Distant Worlds, because I don't know, we were talking about Distant Worlds on last week's podcast, and I was saying that, you know, before Distant Worlds, the only game that's really hit me in the exploration bone really is the two Starfleet games.
Yeah. The only thing is that the Void of Darkness has this story, or not the same story, of course, but I mean, a story to tell, like how Starfleet had. Non-linear, you experience it through exploration and through your interaction with the aliens.
That's perfect. That's the perfect
layer on top. Layered on top of that is the fact that there's this living, breathing universe out there who are going about their own agendas, aside from what you're trying to do. You will come across them, and they'll come across you, and you will be free to pick your own sides from your own ship, your own crew, throwing them into those situations. Just as an example, let's say you're exploring, you might come across two particular races, none of whom you might be friendly with, who might be engaged in a fleet combat at one of their own star bases, and you're free to help one side, not help one side, go your own way, or just loot all the wrecks that occur or are left behind after the battle. These are the kind of things you'll be able to come across in the universe of the game.
No, I love that.
It won't involve any empire building, so I don't want people to get confused when I say it's similar to Void of Darkness. The similarity is that it takes place in a kind of a bigger scope than just how Starfleet did in Starfleet. You never saw other ships flying around, actually. You were always kind of put in an instance, what we would probably refer to now as an instanced encounter, where
that's true, yeah.
You had another ship is approaching, you don't see the ship, the ship has encountered your bram, then you switch to a different screen, which is like the encounter screen, which you can't really, it's not in real space. You have to leave the encounter, then you start about flying in real space.
Yeah, so it's like you would zoom down to subspace from hyperspace or whatever.
There you go, right.
Yeah.
Kind of like how might Star Trek would do instancing in system space from traveling in sector space. Kind of similar like that. That's how Star Trek did it.
Right.
But in VOD, it'll be all seamless. You'll see everything flying around. You'll see all the space stations around, and everything you can encounter, you'll see, excuse me, up front from a distance, because part of the exploration, and I know you had mentioned to me one time about micromanagement in terms of dealing with the crew or dealing with the ship. You don't want to burden player with micromanagement beyond what they would want to do.
Right.
And anything else can be handled by the AI itself.
Oh, that's awesome.
Excuse me a second.
You all right?
I probably threw it as dry, just needs to get some water maybe.
Right. But yeah, no, that all sounds awesome. I love the living, breathing universe stuff. I mean, yeah, I think there's always going to be room for the top-down games like you talk about. Like, look at Space Rangers 1 and 2. Look how popular those were. And yeah, like you said, FTL. And there are going to be others. I can't imagine Starfleet in 3D. I mean, they kind of tried it with, did you ever play Protostar?
No, I actually never did, because I only discovered recently that there was an attempt to make a Starfleet or something like Starfleet by some of the same creators, which turned out to be Protostar.
Yeah, Exactly.
But I never got a chance to play it.
Yeah, it was more first person-y, and it just didn't feel right. I mean, it still had exploration, but it didn't, you want innovation, but at the same time, I mean, we grew up with the top-down stuff. I don't know why that doesn't work for me sometimes. Like when Grand Theft Auto, for example, moved from the top-down to the 3D, it didn't work as well for me, you know?
In terms of exploration, I want to get away from having you dip your hand into everything, go to every planet up front and see and scan it yourself, that kind of micromanagement. There's star map, first of all,
right,
and then there's tactical map, which enables you to see so far away. I would describe the distance as being like it's minutes worth of faster than light travel away, and you'll be scanning that, and your crew will be scanning it automatically, and then they'll tell you if they see anything that's worth your attention. But you won't actually have to go up and scan 100 dead planets just to find that one rare gem in the haystack. So it's not going to be tedious kind of micromanagement like that.
So let me ask you, if you're like in hyperspace or whatever, and you're flying around and your sensors, your science officer or whatever tells you there's something interesting looking off to the port side, like, you know, could you like change course and check it out? Like,
right,
like,
there you go,
could,
yes.
Like you could in Skyrim, you know, like you're walking around Skyrim and you see your little, you're walking towards something like your little indicator, but you see these little things on your HUD telling you there's something over here you haven't discovered, and there's something over here you haven't discovered. What is that? I'm going to check it out. So you can do that as well, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I'll relate it to Starflight. You remember in Starflight that you had a bomb on the screen? Sometimes you would get your crew coming up telling you various things. I don't remember. There's a little...
No, yeah, I remember, like...
A little
like,
black
yeah,
area. It would like, tell you things occasionally.
Yeah, like there's something at these coordinates or, you
right.
know, or those there's something over there. And that would either be like a ship or it would be one of those wormhole-y things.
Right. I've taken that concept and expanded on it to make a bigger sense of immersion from it. I don't want to get sidetracked into the immersion thing before I finish answering your question, but I'll get to it if I can remember after. But I have that concept in it where the crew is who deals with you. So if your crew is the people are like the gypsies of the universe, they're going to know everything that's going on and they'll tell you what's going on instead of you having to click through whatever to find out. So if you're in warp and you're, let's say 3 minutes in that direction, there's a planet with some strange readings on it. In your crew interaction window, your assigned science officer will come up and tell you, well, over at these coordinates at this planet, we're detecting whatever they're detecting. If they're close enough or good enough to say exactly what it is, they'll be able to paint a more accurate picture of what it is. But generally more, they'll just be saying, well, look, there's something out there that might be worth a look. And you can divert while at warp to look at it. While you're at warp, your maneuverability of the ship is lessened. So you can't do a turn on a dime while you're at warp. So
sure. You
can imagine that while you're at warp, your rotation speed then, in 2D, because it's in 2D, so in top down, your rotation speed of your ship normally is probably like 3/4 of what it would be if you're at sublight speed. So you won't be able to just snap your finger and turn to face direction. You'll be at a reduced speed. And then you just turn and go and you scan it and just say whether whatever it was, you want to bring it on board or you don't want to bring it on board, or if it was maybe just something else that came to your attention, which is not of a physical or tangible nature. Maybe it was a log left back from something. Because all that's part of the story and the exploration in the game.
Mm.
Which sort of drives the game. And so I didn't forget the immersion part. One of the things I wanted to do for Void of Darkness, taking a leaf out of Starflight's book with exploration,
mm-hmm.
immersion, and a good story. Has to be strong in exploration.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Has to have that small ship, huge universe feeling, has to have the story, a compelling story. I mean, I'm not writing Star Wars Empire Strikes Back here, but it has to be compelling enough, you know, that it's worth playing.
Sure, yeah, of course.
And the last is the exploration, story, and immersion. And that immersion, partly, like, will play a big part is your crew. Your crew is going to interact with themselves.
Oh.
As well as interact with you.
Oh, nice.
Through the comm. And so they'll have a life on board that they're living, which you'll be able to get a peek into the commander, seeing their various quarrels or discussions or various little pranks and stuff they'll be up to at the ship as you explore, and they'll occasionally come to you and complain for each other. All that's already in it.
Oh, really?
Already.
Kind of Jagged Alliance-esque, where, you know, you might have people who didn't like each other, and they talk throughout the mission and stuff.
Correct.
Like that. Oh, so that's awesome.
They do a lot of that. I want to, in the future, do an internal model, not model, that's a strong word, give you the ability to walk around inside the ship. It won't be anything fancy like a model in 10 or 20 decks of a ship. You have to be realistic here given the scope and the indie nature of the project, but you will have an internal mode of the ship that you can walk around in and interact with the crew back in a level. And probably either a future update or one of the planned sequels in the trilogy, because it's been broken down into three total parts.
Oh, okay.
That's one thing. The second thing I want to have is the planetary landing. I know a lot of people asked, well, it can't be Starfleet without planetary landing. Yeah. And I'm not going to fight with them on it. I'm going to agree with them, but I'm going to also tell them that if you want planetary landing and space gaming one, then you can write it yourself. I'm going to do it in parts. And the first part I want to get right is the space and the exploration, and those three sets. So that storytelling, that space gameplay, and that exploration, and that immersion. And then I definitely want the planetary aspect of it in either future update or the sequels, depending on what I have to throw around. Because I also don't want to, at this point, a large part of the story has been completed, but I'm hesitant to release any part of the story or any part of that type of gameplay without the proper artistic content to show those races, right. And so on. Like when you would communicate with aliens in Starfleet, you would see a portrait of the alien race and stuff. So all the screenplay is there, but then the races haven't been visualized yet to say, well, this race looks like this or this race looks like that. And there are 11 races, so there's a lot of art that needs to be done for the game, and unfortunately, it'll cost at least about $5,000 to actually get all the art I want done for it.
And that's what the Indiegogo campaign is for?
Yeah, that's what the Indiegogo campaign is for. At this point, it's, 2 weeks left, and I've not paid much attention to only the last couple of days because the fact that it's not realistically going to make it to the end. And I have no issues with admitting it. It's not really anything I'm going to slash my wrist over. Not to say I wouldn't have been thrilled if it had been successful.
Well, can I ask why do you, I'm sorry. I was just going to ask, why didn't you go with Kickstarter? If I may ask, because Kickstarter
only allows for North Americans. You can only host a project on Kickstarter if you're from North America.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it kind of does. I can understand it, though. I mean, you don't want any and everybody to run up a project on it. And I guess that's what they're trying to avoid, because Indiegogo has become so convoluted and is not really garnered towards gaming. It's more garnered towards non-creative projects. Things like, I want to get a sex change operation, help me. Those kind of projects.
Yeah, that's how I got for some Indiegogo, is some kind of charitable donation project.
Fortunately, it does have a fixed campaign, but it's handled in a slightly different way in that your money is deducted when you pledge, but it's refunded if it doesn't reach the asked for amount at the end of the campaign.
Right.
So the money isn't kept, it's actually refunded, but it just takes the money, unlike Kickstarter, who takes it only when the campaign has been successful. Both ways you get back your money, but in this one, it still does the charge right away and then gives you back at the end.
Yeah, I wish Kickstarter would let more people in, but that's one of the reasons I think people trust Kickstarter a little more than Indiegogo, is because it doesn't charge you right away. It feels like there's an extra level of security.
Yeah, I have to be honest and say, it's probably not the best thing for me. I'm asking for Indiegogo funds from people. And here I am, I'll tell you, I never backed on Indiegogo, I only ever backed on Kickstarter. But realistically, it was the only option available for me to try it, and I decided to try it. And while I would have been thrilled if it had been successful, and I would have got the game completed the way I wanted to, it's no reason for me to go and bang my head against the wall and cry.
No, that's fair. I mean, I'm looking at it right now, and it's you've got $690 out of your $5,000 goal, and there's 2 weeks left. I mean, who knows what might happen?
Maybe someone popular over here this and just say, I like Starfleet.
If I won the lottery, I'd be funding all these little indie space games. I'd be having lunch with Chris Roberts. I'd be funding everything.
Why not? I used to love to do that. I used to love to look for it. I have a bookmark here on my computer now. All the, well, I have your website at the top. Abspace, Sim Central, Starfare, Rodina, Starforge.
Yeah.
Novus Eternal. Have you heard of Novus Eternal?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. I have about 30 or so games here bookmarked from indie people.
Yeah, there's a lot of good indie stuff coming up, just like your game. Now, I was wondering, because we've mentioned this to other people who had sadly unsuccessful...
Yes, I've only answered really one question about the game, and that's relative to changing direction in war.
No, my question was actually, if this doesn't go through, will you maybe do like a Minecraft-type alpha funding thing where people pay you 15 or 10 bucks or whatever to get the alpha of the game?
I think you could say a definite yes to that, because I long before the campaign, I discussed Void of Darkness with Desur and went through the approval process, and they were approved.
Oh, okay.
And they said, once I'm ready, I can click the submit button to have the game go through, but it's actually just there waiting for me to make it go live. So I've been through the submission process and had that approved already.
Oh, nice. And Desur is fantastic. So that'd be really good platform to go on.
AlphaFund is on the cards, and that I believe probably around August 15th,
it might
be released Desur, the alpha. My only caveat with that is that it will be stripped down to just the functioning of space travel and the combat that's currently in the game. Because, like I said, I might release certain aspects of alien interaction with some placeholders, but I don't want to ruin the whole impact of the story and the interaction in the game when there's no art there to present it in that kind of way.
Right.
But it should be released by August 15th on this year.
Well, I would totally buy it, let me tell you.
It won't be $10. It would be probably I'm looking at $5.99 for the alpha.
Oh, that'd be even better. I mean, people will... It's amazing how many more games people will buy if they're cheaper. Like, we've talked about this guy. You've heard of Spiderweb Software, I'm sure.
Spiderweb?
Yeah.
I have there.
They've been making RPGs for like 20 years. And for many years, they did the shareware method where it was like $30 for a game. You know, you get a demo. And then they decide, we're going to make all our games $20. We're going to make all our games $10. We're going to have a bundle where for $6, you can buy all of our games. And now they're just making clothes made of money. I mean, you know.
Makes sense. I really didn't want to buy Distant Worlds. I was, I can't say you fully convinced me, because even as much as you convinced me based on your reviews and how much fun you were having with it, the price was a huge barrier.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Such old games, but I bit the bullet and still bought it, and I don't regret it. But how many people out there didn't bite that bullet, would love to play and would love Distant Wars
as a game,
but have not bought it? I wonder why they leave it like that. And it's almost as if, no, we want to be a mediocre success instead of a great success.
So you know, we talked to them last week about, are you going to package this thing? And the guy from Matrix was kind of guarded about, like, we're working on something, but we can't talk yet. So they might actually, I kind of caught the gist in there that they were going to take the base game and the first expansion and pack those together, but still sell the other ones after. What they need to do for that is, like, the Steam sale's going on right now.
Yeah.
The Steam sale for indies, like, if you can get in there, you know, and sell your game at normal price for maybe a month or two and then have a Steam sale hit and really push the thing, I think that's, like, the best part of being on Steam, you know, for
this
an indie
guy
dev.
He was from Code 4, so he was from Matrix Games itself.
Oh, we had a guy from each.
Okay. Because I was just trying to fathom what business sense or business strategy it could be that they've been having it this way for so long, something that maybe I'm not aware of, but it seems to baffle everyone, their pricing point.
Yeah, well, Matrix in general seems to do that. It's like it's a niche thing, so you don't really get the prices never fall as the game's age, right?
Okay.
Like Dominions 3, I keep waiting on that thing. It's still $45. Like, if they would drop that thing to 20, it would be mine. But I've heard that it comes with, like, a pretty thick manual and stuff, so if you get the physical copy. So, okay, maybe that's justified. But it's like, yeah, a lot of their stuff, I keep waiting because, you know, I don't really do that much wargaming, but I kind of like the subject matter, but it's not enough that I'm going to pull out $50 and, you know, for an untested indie thing. So, yeah, it's, you know, I agree.
Of Board Force can probably try to self-publish, you know, break away from Matrix Games. And if they were the ones that wanted a bright shot and Matrix Games would say, no, you know, we have the rights and we're not dropping it, they could probably try self-publishing since it's all digital in any way.
I don't think they wanted to do that. It sounded like they had a pretty good relationship. It's
Yeah, I know. It does, yeah.
Well, I'll say this. Definitely the Matrix game guy that was on, I cannot remember his name. But he was one of Eric. Yeah, he was one of the founders of the company. And just the way that he conducts himself in an interview, you can tell that he's just like super professional PR guy. Like, I wonder if he had a background in that or he just happened to be gifted in it, because it's basically, I guess, whenever you partner with them, they bring that so that, you know, it's like you made the game, but we know how to actually market it kind of thing. And he's really good at that. But the only problem that I have, you know, like we were saying, is the pricing is sort of a barrier to entry to people who are kind of, I want to dip my toe in it, but I don't know if I want to really commit $100 into something.
Yeah, and then there's no demo, is there?
No.
Well, we talked about that too.
Yeah, it would be fine if there was like a time limited demo. It's like, I'll let you play this game for 4 hours, right? Or you can go through the tutorial, but the only thing that's here is the tutorial. That would be fine. And, you know, within like an hour of playing a demo, I pretty much know whether I'm on for the full thing or not.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess they're afraid of having something out there that is not DRM protected, so that you could just take the executable from that and like break the protected one easier. So that's why a lot of companies have said, you know, we don't do demos anymore, because it makes it easier for the pirates. But pirates are going to get you anyway.
If they really want it, yeah.
Yeah.
I've talked to myself about whether Matrix or even Iceberg would consider VOD in their lineup. I'm not sure. It's probably something I would have to submit an actual build for them, and all the supporting documents and design document and probably a cost analysis of what's needed from here to produce it and see if it meets with their quality standards and if they'd be willing to publish it from there. I'm sure once it met with their quality standards and they liked the idea in the game itself, it wouldn't be much of a barrier in terms of budget and production, because needing $5,000 for a game, which you're probably guaranteed to at least make that back or more, being marketed through the Matrix lineup, wouldn't be, you know, a hard decision for them to make.
That's true. But
think about it in the future.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they would. They've had smaller indie space games before, like Starships Unlimited and Star Shatter. Yeah, they've definitely had other indie space games on there before.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, war games are their bread and butter. But also, interesting enough, they're doing weekly sales now. I don't know if you guys have noticed that. They'll pick a product or two every week, and like on Monday, they'll put it on sale for like $20 instead of $40. So
I haven't even bought Shadows yet because, well, I'm not playing much these days. I'm trying to focus the spare time on Void of Darkness itself.
Sure.
Because once you get involved in something like Distant Worlds, then the whole day could end up going away. So it's much easier to try and ignore it and keep it out of sight and out of mind rather than take up a whole day with it. You know, I'll have a treasure at the end of the rainbow once it's finished. Get to spend some time with Distant Worlds Shadows.
Shadows is pretty nice, I'll tell you. It is pretty nice. You should definitely get that. So, in Void of Darkness, what kind of starting options do you have when you create? Like, are you part, like with Starflight, you were pretty much a member of, Interstell?
Interstell, correct.
Yeah, and that was your option, but you could choose, you know, your specific crew, and you can choose to train them. It sounds like you could do that, but are you in a organization like Interstell? Are you a mercenary? Like, what kind of options do you have when you start the game?
I would say it's not set in stone yet, even though at one point it probably had a few layers of cement and bricks and mortar laid down, but I since probably kicked that down. What I had was, you would start the game, you would, just a brief background to so it leads up to why I had it like this. In the game, you are the descendant, probably, but it's 100 years later from when the final battle kicked off. what happened was this unknown race invaded an area of space controlled by Terran Republic, who had control of probably 12 planets. And they, after a long, long war, they were driven from that area of space while evacuating the planet, which had planned for years in some huge arc-like ships.
Right.
Their lone escort ship was the Starship, which is the prototype frigate Void of Darkness.
Oh.
Well, Void of Darkness is... The ship itself belongs to an organization called the Guardians. Probably a little cliche, but the Guardian organization plays a role in kind of what your NSA would play or CIA would play. They were Guardians of the Republic from outside threats, alien threats, those kind of things. Very xenophobic kind of agency. So there's this prototype ship called the Void of Darkness. It's a frigate, and they're the lone remaining escort for the evacuation fleet. Well, the rest of the Terran fleet is engaging the unknown aliens at their homeworld. And while they're fleeing, Void of Darkness uses a prototype weapon which causes an unknown anomaly, which flings the evacuation fleet far, 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 far away, the galaxy far away.
Hmm.
And having been flung there, they then are aided by a mysterious race who call themselves the Orions to get back on their feet again. You know, I mean, you can imagine being thrown back to the Stone Age. I'm trying to go and build a car. I mean, there's just nothing there. There's no raw materials, there's no computers, there's nothing. So the Orions help them to get back on their feet. And now 100 years later, they've relaunched, the Terrans, that is, have relaunched a small exploration fleet that explored this new sector of space they're in. So during that 100 years, the human race was kind of rebuilding in this new area of space with the aid of these enigmatic aliens called the Orions. And they're now got to the point where they're launching a few exploration ships to explore the sector. So the idea was that the player would begin the game with a basic ship and you would recruit your crew from a limited kind of space navy, because you can imagine you're not rebuilding, you're not going to have the cream and the crop around.
Okay.
And you would name your own crew.
Okay, cool.
Which fits in line with people like to, you know, customize the characters.
I always did that in Starflight. Absolutely.
My one issue with that is that it didn't really fit the story in that. I haven't decided which one it would be, whether it will continue in the original vein, because that's all in and coded already, where you recruit your crew from the Starbase and you name them. But I was wondering if to give you a set amount of crew, like a pool from which you can recruit from, like, are these 30 guys have gone through the academy, these are the 30 guys who have been trained and who are available, because as I stated earlier, you don't have a huge space navy to choose from. This is a fledgling exploration fleet which is now going back into space, which you've now decided to explore this new area of space for yourselves.
Right.
And you have this pool, you choose about 5 crew, because the ship is small, so you have the 5, same as keeping it small and cozy like Starfleet. You choose 5 people, your navigator, weapons, tactical, science, communication, those kind of things. And they'll be people already. They'll have their own names, their own backgrounds, and their own stats.
Yeah.
So there might be 5 guys who are science officers, but one guy might have a higher level of training in science, so you could pick him, because your crew will gain experience as you explore. And that's regards to the question you have, how you would begin. So you begin with that basic relationship, that basic crew, whichever way you choose to get, the final way is to get that crew, whether by you choosing or them, sorry, you naming them or you choosing from a pool, and then you just have to explore. And you get a general, you get a same as Starfleet, how they gave you this general mission briefing. Well, your mission is to stop the spamming death fleet. Focusing mainly on the Starfleet 2, how Starfleet 2 story went.
Right.
Where advanced technology and, you know, stop spamming from blowing up Earth, their new home world, that kind of thing. You get a general brief, and then from there on, it's up to you to go and meet all the aliens that are around, explore the planets that are around, fight them or not, help them or not, get their help, it has a reputation system as well. So make friends. You can invite a darkness while you're exploring and you need help. You can send distress signals and people can respond, and you can also be made aware of distress signals. There are other ships that are under attack who you can respond and assist yourself. That's where you are in the beginning of the game. Basic ship, basic crew, and a universe to explore.
Oh, I like that. You know what? You know, it's tough because there was kind of a joy in making your friends in the game, you know?
Yeah, you being able to name your crew.
Right, exactly. But at the same time, there is an appeal of choosing from among this ragtag group of recent Academy graduates. And
Which ones will be the best?
Yeah, which ones will be the best? And
people that would probably come with their own personality already, you know?
Yeah, like Rules of Engagement did that, where you kind of made your own commander, but when you made a fleet, you had a pool of captains to choose from.
Right.
And each captain had their own personality, and one might listen to you, and one might not, and one might follow every order, and one might do their own thing, and one might, you know, just hate everyone who isn't them. You know, so that'd be, I think that would add an interesting dynamic. I kind of say I might have to prefer that method, because then you could also add pre-existing biases and relationships.
There you go, yeah.
Like
a little more diversity in the scope of it.
Like, what if you picked two officers and you didn't know they were romantically involved previously, but that comes out later while you're flying around?
Yeah, one of my testers was, when he first got a copy of the game, one of the, interactions between the crew is this female member of the crew complains to the captain, you know, the captain, this guy over here, Jack, you know, he's sexually harassing me. I need to do something about it.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
He thought that was so hilarious. Just out of the blue, while he's flying around, the female officer complains that the ex guy here, he's sexually harassing me.
That's actually pretty awesome. I have to admit, that is actually pretty awesome.
And then they have the other crew member. They have a betting thing going on, and the guy asks the captain, or he asks you. He comes up on the intercom. You say, "Have you seen, you know, X, Y, or Z?" And then he's talking to you as if you're talking back to him.
Right.
And he says again, "Well, no, this is not about the gambling game I lost last time. Why would you even think that?" And then he says, "Well, by the way, do you happen to remember? Could you tell me the code to the weapons locker? I seem to have forgotten it." So this guy is looking to arm himself from any retribution from his shipmate who he didn't pay out for losing some bet in some gambling game. But he's asking it in the most innocent of ways, you know. Could you just give me the code to the weapons locker again? Seemed to have misplaced it.
That reminds me, wasn't there a bulletin in, I think it was Starflight 1, where like you'd read the bulletin and one of them was like, "Dude, where's my money?"
Yeah, it's between a guy or Zeno and Bono.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. All the time you come, just get these random messages, you have no idea what's going on between them. Meet me on planet X, Y, or Z. Yeah, so it's kind of in the vein of that, but only thing is your crew this time on your ship. And your crew can leave. The crew can leave your ship if they get fed up with you. If you do a certain amount of silliness or put them through a certain amount of stress, depending on the how strong a particular crewman is in terms of, you know, how much heart or, for lack of a better word, balls he has, they'll eventually get upset and leave the ship at your next port of call.
Really?
Yeah, so that guy, let's say you've been exploring with this guy, you've trained him and he's the best navigation officer or science officer ever, and you've grown to really like him, you know, his nuances and all the things he complains to you about. Then all of a sudden you get the next port of call and you realize, well, I'm not happy, I'm leaving. And they'll say, well, John has left the ship and you're without John and you have to go on recruiting a new officer. Yeah, I'm turning all those kind of little things already, all those little small, what would they call it? The small things that enhance the immersion of the game.
Yeah, give it flavor, give it life.
Trying to throw as much of that into it as possible.
Okay, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, so the anomalies are in the game, you know, from they call them fluxes in Starflight. In this, I'm calling them anomalies, kind of based on that anomaly which would throw you into the past.
Right.
So the anomalies can be of two types. Either one that's fixed, so send you out to a fixed location, or it can be a different type of anomaly which will be called the flux in the game. And it can send you anywhere random, or even damage your ship, or as the case may be, if you don't have your shields up or whatever.
Ooh.
And you can map these anomalies. So when you go through an anomaly, it's automatically recorded on your star map where it leads to. If it's a type 1 or a type 2 anomaly, if it's a type 1, it's a wormhole. So it's a fixed entry. It'll always be stable, like sort of the Bajor wormhole in Star Trek. So every time you go through, you always end up in the same particular place. And then your star map will have it on that you can filter it by to show you, well, filter for wormholes and show you where the wormholes end up. So you can map out wormholes, which will give you a quick kind of space tunnel across the universe. Not one wormhole won't lead to the other end of the universe, but a series of them might. Once you mapped it out, you would know where it leads to where.
Nice.
All right, and your crew, again, with the immersion factor, your crew will, if you get near to a wormhole, and, you know, for the first time in the game, someone, you know, who hasn't listened to this interview, which is probably like everyone in the world, when they first come across a wormhole, and the crew will tell you, you know, Captain, you shouldn't really be so close to this thing, because wormholes will suck you in once you get a certain distance away from them.
Right.
And then they'll kind of throw you out and damage your ship, depending on what defenses you had or what you didn't have. So they're not something you want to get close to without thinking about it first, because the game is not fully, totally settled on it yet, but I'm thinking that the saving is going to be that you can only save when you're at the next space station or port of call.
No, that's totally fair.
Not in between, right? So it'll add that level of tension in it. You know, do I want to go through this wormhole? I just collected X, Y, or Z cargo. Do I really want to go through this wormhole, or do I want to dump this cargo first, save, and then go through this wormhole wherever it was? So it adds that level of tension and danger that these wormholes will lead who knows where, and you'll meet who knows who, which was kind of similar to how it would happen in Starfleet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you couldn't. I mean, I think you could save. Could you save? I think you could save everywhere, anywhere in Starfleet.
Yeah, you could. You could save and quit. Yeah, or save and continue in Starfleet too.
But the way that Starfleet punished defeat was that 5-minute load time. So.
Yeah, I love that.
So you could just build that in. If you want to play Iron Man, it's like, okay, but you can only reload once every 5 minutes.
Yeah. And add the fake sound of a floppy disk loading.
Starfleet 1 was terrible. Starfleet 1 had, you had to quit the game in order to save it.
That's right.
Yeah, you had to.
It's been
and
so
then
fun.
You had to continue.
Yeah, and if your save game, I think my second playthrough, like my disk got bent a tiny little bit, and so my save got, I put like 60 hours into my second game, and I lost my save.
I found Starfleet 2 to be quite more enjoyable with the trade routes, and the Cloud Nebula, and the story, and the personality of the alien races. I think it was a much better built upon how they, than the original. The original really set the tone, you know.
Yeah.
This is cool. And then Starfleet 2 really built upon that and carried it forward.
Starfleet 2 had one fatal flaw, though. It ended. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Like with Starfleet 1, when you were finished, you could still fly around with all your awesome weaponry. And I used to love to hassle the Gazertoid. Remember those guys?
Oh, yeah, I remember.
They were always mad at you. So I would just jump everywhere and shoot at them. They hated me so much. But with Starfleet 2, you just got this, the end screen, and then bumped you back to a DOS prompt. And you're like, wait a minute. I just put 200 hours into that, and that's all you give me?
Not much closure at all.
That's not cool.
I think it was a human face popped up saying, oh, we're from this particular colony ship. Thank you for saving us. Goodbye.
Yeah, something like that. And then you get a picture of a planet, the end, poof, you're out.
Somehow I can't believe that was the original intended ending. I'd like to see a director's cut of that ending.
That's where the funding ended, right there.
Yeah.
We have enough funding to make this one screen with the end on it. Let's just fucking do that.
But as for Arch Nemesis in VOD, it'll be kind of pirates. Pirates will be, as it is now, once you've left beyond a certain distance from your starting area, which is not heavily patrolled by the race known as the Urans, you can be attacked and ransomed by pirates. They'll tell you, well, give me X amount of fuel, you know, and I'll let you live. And they give you X amount of time to decide. And you can stall them for more time. And once you stall them enough and they get out of patience, then they'll be like, you know, your time's up. It's either give me the fuel now or you're dead. And if you just continue to ignore them, your time runs out and they'll start to open fire and those kind of things. And they have a weapon which disables their engine. So
wait, is fuel the currency in this game?
No. There's not going to be... There's going to be a currency in terms of trading with other races, but your upward mobility in your own empire or in the Terrans will be through a form of prestige. So if you want, when you want to upgrade your ship from a smaller ship, if you want a bigger ship like a cruiser, you gain prestige from bringing things back to the empire. Since they're sending you out to explore the sector as a fledgling exploration bid, what you bring back in terms of technology, they'll give you prestige for, like, oh, this, you know, and that kind of concept. So once you have that amount of prestige, you can then say, well, I am allowed. I want to fly this ship, and you'll be granted access to be able to play this cruiser, and it won't deduct prestige. So it's not like a monetary system. It's once you have reached that level of prestige.
Oh, I see. So I think that's how Starfleet Command kind of worked.
That's a modeled after Starfleet Command.
Oh, that was a good system. I like that system. So yeah. Good job. I think that system.
I don't think many people have used that kind of system even since Starfleet Command. Everything is about buying and selling, and I never really understood the idea of you're in a navy or a space navy or any kind of army, and you have to buy all of your own equipment, like buy your own ship.
Isn't that how Star Trek Online? Isn't that how Star Trek Online works?
Star Trek Online. You can buy your own ships, I think, yes.
What? Yep. That doesn't make any sense.
No, I never really liked it. So in this instance, it has the monetary trade when you're trading with other races, because you don't have prestige for them. But once, let's say you go and you're doing some asteroid mining, and you have this particular mineral. I have a name for it, but there's so many different names. I'll just tell you titanium off the top of my hat. And you go to one of the alien races and you sell them titanium. You get currency for that. Mm-hmm. Legal tender, so we'll call it.
Okay.
And then from that, you can buy things from them. So anything you buy, let's say you were to buy a new shield and you carry it back. You give it over to your navy then, or your group, they'll give you your prestige book for bringing that technology back.
Okay.
So you won't really be selling it to them in a sense, but that's how that system works. Trade isn't removed from the game. You can still trade. And the trading is modeled after Starfleet as well. I don't want to say I'm copying Starfleet from A to Z. It's still very much inspired by it, but there's some things that were good enough and fun enough in Starfleet that they deserve to be in any game inspired by Starfleet, such as the haggling.
I have no problem even if you did copy it from, as you say, A to Z, because that's such a British thing, isn't it? That's a British thing, the Z thing. That's a British thing.
We were a British colony.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, we were. 1966 was independence.
Oh, well, yes, congratulations.
They conquered us.
I'm a typical American. I know very little about cultures outside my state. Yes, Jim, tell me about that far-off land of North Carolina. I don't understand your strange ways and customs.
Oh, I can't remember where we left off just now. I'm sure I was going to make some important point.
But I'm sorry, I interrupted you. But the haggling thing in Starflight 2 was the barter, the haggling. That was great. I loved that.
That's in there already.
I love that. That was great. And I love that, like, if you wanted something, you wouldn't just have to trade a thing. That you'd have to actually do something for it. You know,
to get them to be able to sell your particular items.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I remember this one mission where, like, they wanted you to get this one thing for them, but to get it, you had to go to this one planet, and then they wanted you to do something.
There's a whole chain of stuff, yeah.
There was a 6-7 part chain to the whole thing, and it was great. I mean, some people might have found it tedious. I certainly didn't. I loved it. It was awesome.
Well, at least in the end, I'm trying to make it something that a fan of the original Starfleet can see and appreciate. Because someone who never played Starfleet might see this VOD and think, well, why is this done, or why is that done, or why can't I do this, or why can't I do that? Right. But it's really still, in the end, a niche project. And yeah, Haglin is in there, and it's quite fun already.
I'm sure.
So just to be reminded of how Haglin and Starfleet, that's one of the things I never forget about Starfleet. And the things they would say, you know, like, think of my starving children. I can't really go any lower than what I've done. All that. So I borrowed those statements to as a homage to the original Starfleet, you know, as a so that fans of the original game, when they see that, they remember those days when they were playing it.
Oh yeah,
astute traders.
That kind of reminds me, I was going to ask, because there are a lot of people who haven't played Starflight, and then I try to get people to play it, and then they try it, and they're like, oh God, these menus. Oh God, this is so crazy. So how do you, like, Like, is the menu similar to Starflight, but mouse-based and all that stuff? Or, like, how does the UI work?
All right. So you control your ship in real time through the keyboard and mouse.
Okay.
Cool. Everything in the UI, it's clickable. So as you navigate the user interface, everything is clickable. There's a command button on the left, which will open your star map, raise your shields, arm your weapons, open your view screen, which is used to communicate if you're in an encounter. I call it an encounter, but it's not a physical encounter as you would think of in Starfleet, but it becomes an encounter once you've healed them and it decides to talk with you. So when we say encounter, that's what I particularly mean there.
Oh, okay.
So you can open your view screen, open your tactical map, all those what I would call quick commands. You have a lower left corner window which shows you your quick view of your ship status, in terms of damage, your power allocation,
nice,
etc. And the weapons and the combat is controlled. The WASD to move your ship. You set a speed and it will accelerate to that speed. And the weapons are all mapped to your mouse. So the right mouse button would fire your conventional weapons. You can hold it down. And there's a quick bar for the advanced technology which you can acquire through exploration, such as, all right, let's give an example. There's a weapon I've called the Frustrum Torpedo. If you're programming, you might be familiar with the term Frustrum, but it's not spelled the same. So this torpedo is also known as the Super Bomb. When it's launched, it's an area of effect weapon. Once you've armed the bomb just by a click of the mouse, then the left mouse button charges it and fires it. So you can still be flying, fighting, controlling your ship while firing your special weapon, firing your conventional weapons, and keeping your shoes up all at the same time, seamlessly without pounding the keyboard or getting confused. It's a very, very simple and intuitive way to control the ship, explore, fly, and fight at the same time.
Right. That sounds awesome. Now, with that kind of bomb, like, if you launch that, do you have to turn tail and get the hell out of there before it goes off? Like, will it damage you as well?
That's not in yet, and I can't even say I've given it much consideration. But I suppose it's something people would wonder about, this big powerful bomb which can destroy four or five ships in a group. Is not damaging me, but
it should damage you, I think, because then that would make it that much more tense. Like, oh god, run!
Yeah, those are kind of the opinions I want. You know, when people play the test version of the game, what do you think about what's there and what they would like to add? Because at this early stage, it's anyone's game. Anyone can make a suggestion, and like you said, it adds to the tension of using that weapon, because it's kind of a last resort weapon, because it's balanced to the point where it drains your ship's energy in that you can't fire more than one at a time. So it's like you're surrounded by five guys. I'm going to resort to my super bomb, drain all my energy to charge it, fire it, bam, hope it kills them all, and I'm away. Because your energy, your defense of your ship relies on the same energy as well.
Oh, really?
Right, so you can control your shield by the middle mouse button. So once, let's say you're surrounded by three, four guys, and they're shooting at you and you're flying around, and you fall outside of their arc at some point, and they're not able to lock onto you and fire, that's a good time to quickly turn off your shield, let your energy recharge, and then when they get back in arc and start firing again, you turn it on, and it's easy because it's a middle mouse button, just a click of the button in your hand, never leaves your mouse.
Okay.
So it kind of adds an element of strategy to the combat.
Yeah, by making your shield finite along with your weapons.
There you go. And the thing of that shield is it can't be penetrated by weapons. It's meant to be an advanced device you would discover in the game. So it's not a device you would start out with. There are conventional shields in the game. Facing actually directional shields, like forward, rear,
right,
starboard, and port, which you have to maneuver to, you know, protect one when it's weak or whatever. But this particular advanced defense, when you have it up, it'll drain your ship's energy, core energy, very slowly. And each core energy does have a pretty good recharge rate. So the advantage of this shield is that nothing can penetrate it. So you could be surrounded by 20 ships and nothing can penetrate it, but it is going to drain that energy slowly but surely. So at some point, you're going to have to turn it off, and you're not going to want to turn it off while surrounded by 20 guys firing at you. So it's kind of adds a mix of the flair of the whole combat by having to, once you've acquired that shield, to be able to keep your energy up and use your energy also to destroy who's attacking you.
Now,
kind of strike the balance.
Now, like, when you find stuff, like, how much stuff can you put on your ship? Like, you can get bigger ships, you were saying. Like, are there different slots for stuff like special shields like that? and slots for weapons and slots for conventional shields and that sort of thing. And just like different ships have different amounts of slots and that sort of thing. Like, how does that all work?
I don't think I would describe it as slots at this point. Right now you can upgrade your engines, shields, weapons, armor, and sensors. Those five components. I think that was five: weapons, shields, armor, sensors. Yeah, I think it's five.
Okay.
And there's no specific slots that they were going. So if you want better engine, you take those off. But it's not going to. In the end, it is you can only have one engine on. So I guess that's your engine slot. But it's not slotted any user interface or user experience that way.
Right.
And it's not going to be strictly upgraded, as in engine 2 is better than engine 1, and engine 3 is better than engine 2.
I see.
There will be a kind of diversity to the components, in that engine 1 will have particular attributes and engine 2 will have particular attributes. Like, one might have a higher top speed and one might have a slower acceleration.
Right.
So it kind of, like, it's not bigger is always better. It's not, I have a cruiser now, that's a better ship because it's bigger than the frigate. It'll fit to how you want to fight, because the cruiser will be slow in acceleration, slow in turn rate, but it'll have the ability to fire starboard, port, rear. Whereas, like a smaller ship, the frigate will have only forward firing guns, but will be more maneuverable than the cruiser.
Oh, I like that. But
yeah.
So there's the upgrade chase in, but there's also the loot chase in finding that shield you mentioned, or that weapon.
Right. Right. And I'll give it, let me see a quick one through here. So those advanced weapons are the ones that will use your ship's core energy. Conventional weapons won't use that core energy.
Oh, okay.
So to give you another example of that's one of the things I want to put a lot of advanced technology, what I call an advanced technology, in the game, for the game's point of view, for you to find to outfit your ship with. So yes, you will be able to get better things than what you start with from your own navy. And the main things, which the story and the exploration and the kind of the plot of the game is going to drive you towards, is exploring to find those advanced pieces of technology to outfit your ship with. For example, one of them would be point defense. There's this point defense you can get, which when you outfit your ship, it'll shoot down all incoming fire, as well as enemy fighter craft. It targets enemy fighter craft. So any swarm of enemy fighters you have around you, turn on your point defense, and it can make short work of them. And that will also drain your energy while the point defense is on.
Hmm.
Just, I guess, quickly, two more examples, because I'm trying to load it down with things that make sense.
Right,
not just load it down sick, but I've really gone through it in terms of brainstorming on paper. What kind of devices would be cool from a space combat point of view? And another advanced tech you can acquire would be what I call the ablative matrix. This will enhance your armor with more resistance to weapons fire. So when you turn it on, again, it uses energy from your capacitor. Not a lot at a time. So you can have two or three devices on, and your energy will still drain slowly. So it's not that you're only going to be able to have one on and use it for like 3 seconds and you have no energy. It's designed in a way that you'll be able to use more than one device at a time. So the ablative matrix will give you like 50, 60% resistance to energy fire on your armor. So you can hang in a firefight longer. Then there is the nanite armor repair, which when you activate it, it'll repair armor damage. So you won't only be able to repair your armor when you dock. You'll be able to repair it after the battle by turning on your nanite device, repairing your armor with nanites.
Okay.
Those are just examples of, so the technology is split into advanced components you can acquire and defensive. The point defense, the nanite repair, and the ablative matrix would fall more along defense. The cluster bomb and the super bomb would fall along the area of offensive technology.
Mm.
I'm trying to spice up the combat in terms of space past, what Starfleet was able to do or what Starfleet did. And because that's one of the things that people would also say to Starfleet. Yeah, it was great, and the combat wouldn't detract from a great game, but it could have been better.
Yeah. The combat was definitely the weakest part of that game.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Starflight 1 and 2, The End of the Earth, but yeah, the combat was definitely the weakest part.
That's one of the things we all agree on.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, it was clunky, it was tedious, it was poorly implemented. But the game got so much else right,
Right, exactly.
I mean, combat was like minor compared to trying to talk your way out of it, which I also liked.
Right, which is funny. Yeah. Especially when you didn't have much any way of technology and you got kind of unfair advice. by the spamming and stuff.
Oh, God. That pissed me off because in the first game, they were such a pushover. And then in the beginning of Starflight 2, when you had to be all bowy downy to them, it was like, oh, God.
There you go.
I hate my life. This is awful.
That's kind of the role the pirates are playing in this game because the pirates have bases of operation.
All right.
And so let's say you're out exploring early on, you get ransomed by pirates, and you know they whoop your tail and you head back home. And later on in the game, you come back out with your souped up starship and destroy like, you know, 40 or 50 of them. And you can find their bases and destroy their bases as well. Because the bases of pirates and the alien races, if they get destroyed, will be rebuilt over time in the game.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Right. So once, if you destroy a pirate now and you come back a couple hours later in game time, you'll see them rebuilding the base and it's business as usual.
Nice.
That kind of enables you to get your revenge on for their early on misgivings earlier in the game.
Now, could you talk your way? I think you were saying, like, with pirates at least, they'll, like, say, we won't kill you if you give us this much fuel. And you give them that much fuel. But with, like, other encounters, is diplomacy usually an option? Or are there races that'll just, there got to be races that'll just shoot you no matter what?
There is races which actually follow directly along the plot of the game as to why they will and why they won't throughout the course of the game. Because it'll change. Throughout the course of the game, there'll be guys who will blow you up from beginning to end and you won't know why. And then at some point in the game, you'll figure out why they were and why they will stop and what you can do to make them stop. Those kind of things.
Right. Okay. See, I like everything I'm hearing. I like everything I'm hearing about. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, so we can get more people going, hey, I like all that. I mean, I hate to say it. I don't think it's going to save your Indiegogo campaign.
Yeah.
But...
All right.
But once you get onto Sur and start Alpha Funding, hopefully by then more people will have heard about this. This sounds fantastic game. And shell out $5.99, I think you said?
Yeah, correct.
That's fantastic. So that's like an app store purchase.
Yeah, the Alpha would be quite worth the $5.99. You know, it would include the ability to fly and explore and see the galaxy as it is now. And all of the, you get to experience the combat at an advanced stage of the game, because it would be very fun to give people an alpha and then have them in a beta ship with one little laser and get them blown up all the time. So they'll be able to experience an advanced kind of combat of the game to get them a taste of what lays in the future of the game as they explore and drive through. It's just, my one caveat is that, again, I had mentioned earlier, I don't want to release the story too much in the alpha or show the story without showing you the aliens themselves and give you the full impact of that story, you know, seeing who you're talking to and stuff, because all those placeholders are basically there now. Just the view screen is blank, because those are the kind of things I want the artists to create. The look of races, all the various ships and all the other user interface stuff that the game currently needs.
Right, of course. Well, you know, tell people it's an alpha, they'll understand.
Not always. Yeah, not always they don't, because I've seen some people even review alphas and pre-alphas, and it kind of is like, why is the graphics this bad? And
exactly.
Why isn't this working like it shouldn't? It's just mind-boggling.
I was playing a non-space game recently called Cube World, which is in alpha. And people were like, why isn't there more to do? And why is this so hard? Why is this balanced? It's like, hello, alpha.
I would say DoD right now has been in development for a good 6 months.
Okay, that's good. That's well along.
Yeah. Well along, and one person doing it, they can forgive it at its stages now. And I'm really, really looking forward to feedback from people that buy the alpha, even if they say, well, look, it has potential. It's just not feeling the fun right now, but all the things they're aiming to do are really good. But if you painted this wall blue and shoved this chair over here, this would be way better. You know, these kind of little suggestions, constructive suggestions. If it's not their cup of tea, that's totally fine. But if you say, well, this is bad, it doesn't help me to fix what was wrong with their experience. And if you're gonna pay even $5.99 for an alpha version of a space game, you must be some kind of a fan of a space game that something in you wants to see it come through to fruition to be better than what it might be right now. You're not paying for a final game.
Exactly.
And largely you're paying, I tried to stress in Indiegogo campaign, the game right now is at a stage where you can shape a lot of how you play it. It won't. The core of the game won't change. I'm not changing the core and the game itself for little whims, people's whims or whatever.
Sure.
What they want to see, but it'll be more along the lines of they bring up something I haven't thought of, and we hash it out and say, well, yes, this works.
No, that's
what.
That's the way you do it. You let the your fans give you good ideas, but you still stick to your original vision. That's the way to do it.
I wanted to mention one of the things that people liked as well, because I have about 5 or 10 people testing the game off and on right now, and one of the things that they liked was they like Newtonian. You know, people like Newtonian space physics, like the ability to face a different direction but still be going in a particular direction.
Right.
So in VOD, you can kind of cut your engines for or shut off the engines and slide in any direction you're going while still turning. So I don't know if that explains or clarifies it, but let's say you're being chased and you're at full speed flying away from your enemy and they're behind you. You can cut your engines, turn your ship to face them, kind of like Babylon 5 then, while flying backwards and shooting them with your guns while moving backwards. So it adds the ability to turn it on and off if you're flying a particular ship. So it won't do for the larger ships, but the smaller ships like frigates, they'll have that ability to turn, to cut that kind of power and fly that kind of way. So the best of both worlds, it has the real flight physics, or what they call real in space, and also the normal one you would expect. That whole Star Trek does it.
Star Trek does it. I love it. Well, I've learned a lot more about your game. And your videos have been very informative. Keep putting those out. But I feel like I've learned a lot more tonight, which is awesome, because as soon as that alpha comes out, I'm probably going to be clicking that buy button. But I wanted to wrap this up because we're getting a little, like, it's been over an hour now.
Yeah.
But I wanted to thank you, Justin, for taking the time for joining us. I apologize. I'm a little out of it tonight, which is why I might not have sounded as engaged as I usually am. I'm listening to everything you said. It's just been a very weird week for me. But,
no, that's fine. When I was waiting for the time to stick around, I was like, I wish I should probably reschedule this, because I was pretty tired myself today. And I guess once I get talking about the game, a lot can come up.
No, that's totally fine. You didn't ramble at all. That was perfect, actually. But yeah, it kind of worked out because I was not feeling very chatty tonight. I'll be honest. I apologize for that. But I wanted to thank you for taking the time to tell us about your game. And like I said, I'm sorry about your Indiegogo campaign, but I'm excited that you're going to be doing alpha funding. That's going to be great. So we'll definitely keep an eye on that. But folks, thank you for listening. As always, this has been an interesting one, as always. And I want to, you know, invite you, as always, to leave your comments below or contact us at hail@spacegamejunkie.com. Thank you, as always, Jim. Thank you, Justin. And everyone, have a great night.
Bye, Jim.
Good night. Thanks, guys.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler.
Sure thing.
I made sunshine down, but I see only one. When I think I'm over you, I find I'm just begun. Faster than the days, there's no warmth in the light. And how I miss those desert skies, you're